Lord, as we consider the things that Jesus said, we ask that you would direct our thinking and that we may be changed to be more like him. In his name we ask it. Amen. Greater love has no man than this, but a man lay down his life for his friends. I've always found particularly poignant the reading of the names of the fallen when you come to the names of a number of sons in the same family. You have, I think most of you, received a handout of the names of those from the locality whose names are recorded here on the plaque on the wall. There are two Cornwall sons, aged 29 and 20 at the date of their death. There are two Dorman sons, killed on the same day, though in different regiments, both 2 days before the end of the Battle of the Somme. There are, over the page, three Pope brothers. Three brothers in that family born to William and Emily Pope, who were butchers in Heathfield. You may have noticed another Pope in the names read for the Second World War. In fact, those three who died in the First World War had three other brothers. And here, on the screen now, you will see a picture of six brothers. Not, in fact, the Pope brothers, but six brothers who lived in Warbleton Priory. The sons of John and Mary Hobden, who were farmers and horse breeders. All those six served in different places, in the trenches, in Iraq, and in India. And there was a yet further younger brother, Percy, who tried to enlist. But as he came up to the recruitment officer, one of his older brothers pointed him out as being too young, and he was sent home. And here's something remarkable. Of those six, some were wounded, but all survived. By contrast, you will have noticed the name, perhaps, of Edgar Message in your handout, the son of Herbert and Miriam, who lived at the old schoolhouse in Rushlake Green. He died on the 9th of May 2015, which makes me think that he probably died at Orbis Ridge, on a day when the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Sussex Regiment went over the top in a diversionary tactic to lure the Germans into thinking that an offensive was to take place there, when in fact it was going to take place further north. Out of the 850 men who went over the top, 260 were killed, and there were 565 casualties. Potluck, who died and who came back? I heard of a father with two sons, one outgoing, gregarious and popular, the other quieter, more introvert and self-conscious. Both went to war. The former was killed in a tank, the other came back a physical wreck that lives. And the father was heard to say, "The wrong son came home." One dies, another does not. There's no justice in that. It's said, isn't it, that many who came back from the war felt guilty that they had survived when others had not. Why not me? No doubt they'd all gone to war with a mixture of motives. But those who died sacrificed themselves for the sake of others, whether willingly or unwillingly. sacrifice. That is the focus which Jesus gives to his own death when he talked about it before it happened. Sacrifice. Not fair, not just. In fact, in his case, the epitome of injustice for an innocent man to be done away with as if he were a criminal. And not just men doing away with an innocent man, but men doing their best to do away with God. Criticism may be made of staff officers who sacrificed troops, who put their lives at risk in tactical assault. But Jesus not merely put his life on the line in risking death, but tells us beforehand that he was deliberately choosing to die, to sacrifice himself, with no attempt at all to avoid death. And if you miss that about the cross, you miss everything. The most common picture of a good king in the ancient world was that of a shepherd, hence the pictures you see of pharaohs in Egypt with their little shepherd's crook. The shepherd who knows his people, who does what is best for them, he, their protector and ruler, who cares for them as a good shepherd for his sheep, and they accept his leadership and follow him. Just as a good officer cares for his men, and they follow him, even over the top. Against that background of what a shepherd stood for, Jesus describes himself in our first reading as the good shepherd. And as king, he doesn't send his followers to the front to die for him and his cause, whilst he gives orders from the back, like the Duke of Blasatoro. He, the perfect king, the good shepherd, goes to die himself, when he could have survived by using the power at his disposal to stop those seeking his life. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Again, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep. My sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And so what he says is this. He says that the close relationship that he shares with his Father is what he wants with his followers. Just as he relates to his Father, he wants us to relate to him in friendship and sonship. And the point comes across again in a further passage that Matthew kindly read to us in John 15. As the Father loved me, so I have loved you. Remain in my love. But what he's looking for is loyalty and obedience, as the following verse makes clear. If you obey my commands, you'll remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. A sheep who doesn't do as the shepherd requires gets into trouble. So too the soldier who disobeys orders. But with the perfect shepherd, the perfect leader, the followers follow gladly and joyfully, even into danger and hardship. I've told you this, he says, so that my joy may be in you, and your joy may be complete. And then the words that I began with. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. Immediately followed by him saying that his friends are those who follow him, those for whom he is about to die. He dies for his followers, in their place, for his friends. That's astonishing enough. And yet there's something even more astonishing, as explained in our second reading. It's easier, isn't it, to understand how someone would be prepared to risk his life or even sacrifice it for family or friends. But what God does goes way beyond that. Here is a very poor illustration. But I just want you to imagine for a moment a U-boat and an English frigate. And they engage in battle, and each is destroyed, leaving only two survivors, one from each side. One is in terrible physical condition with serious injuries and considerably weakened, whilst the other is fit. And each grabs for the only piece of wood that is there to support them in the open sea, without which they will die. But it will not support them both. Does the fit man push his enemy off? No. He willingly lets go and sinks so that the other will live. It's a poor illustration, I know. But what did we read in our second reading? At the right time, when we were powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man, someone might possibly dare to die. But God shows his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. When we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his Son. How much more shall we be saved through his life? Jesus dies not only for his friends, but for those who are his enemies. Wars and our own individual lives show our battle against God and what he requires of us, do they not? Because we are like sheep who run away from the shepherd rather than following him. We are like deserting soldiers who will not follow our commander, but want to go our own way. Worse, we fight against God's rule. We're hostile to the very idea that we should live for him, that we are his, that we owe him everything. We want to go our own way and live for ourselves. And yet Christ steps in to take the responsibility of all of that on himself, so that the logical and justifiable consequence of our desertion and rejection of God's rule is meted out not on us, but on him, Jesus. He takes the consequences of all the evil of the world expended on him. While we were at enmity with God, he died for us so that we could be acquitted of the wrong we've done him, put in the right with him, justified, reconciled to him. Why me? Simply because of God's undeserved love. God shows his love for us in this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So let me finish with this. How do we respond to the sacrifice of those who died in war for us? We owe them a debt in the way that we live now, do we not? How do we respond to the sacrifice Jesus made for us? We owe everything to him, the very life that we have. And the question, the challenge is, what are we doing with that life? Or for many of us, as we grow older, what remains of it? Will we make him our king, our shepherd, our commander-in-chief, and follow him whatever it means, even to death and through death, beyond it? That is the challenge that Jesus faces us with.